So hard, my bass and fun.
Read so hard, libraries trying to find me. They can't identify me. Checked in with a pseudonym, so I guess you could say I'm Mark Twaining. Read so hard,
that shit cray.
That shit cray.
Ain't it, eh?
Read so hard,
what you reading?
What you reading?
D-Montaigne.
Read so hard,
you use a Kindle? I carry spines, supporting bookshelves like a bra.
Hi, you're listening to Drunk Booksellers. My name is Kim.
And I'm Emma.
And we're professional booksellers.
And casual drinkers. Today we're talking to Benjamin, or Ben, Rybeck, the marketing director and events coordinator at Brazos Bookstore, and also the author of The Sadness, which is coming out June 14th.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Quick question. Brazos or Brazos?
Oh.
Brazos, I believe. Ah. It might be Brazos. People say both.
I trust you more than me. So.
Yeah, I've always been calling it Brazos, but
I think it's. I feel like if I say it again, I'm going to say the opposite of what I just said. So
your store's going to be like, dude, you work here. Come on.
We'll ask you again mid episode and see if the answer changes.
Yeah, trip me up
after a couple drinks. You know,
right. I'll add a third syllable after a couple drinks. Yeah.
There you go. Yep. There you go. Well, what are we drinking tonight, Ben?
You know, I wanted to keep it simple. I'm a simple man. We are drinking screwdrivers. Though particularly with Stolichnaya vodka. Mm-hmm. I had this memory of reading. I was really agonizing over what to pick, and then I had a memory of reading Philip Roth's book Sabbath's Theater, and the main character of that book spending most of the time wandering around drunk, drinking straight from a bottle of Stolichnaya. Nice. So I thought maybe we would drink that. I'm not so brave as to, or so stupid as to drink straight from the bottle. So we'll cut it with some orange juice, I suppose. It's a very, I feel like I'm in high school again, sitting in my friend's basement drinking screwdrivers. So,
We actually have a sponsor for this episode, which is very exciting. So I feel like we've adulted hardcore here.
Sure.
As a podcast. So our sponsor for this episode is Books and Whatnot, which is a daily newsletter for independent booksellers. Ben, do you subscribe to Books and Whatnot?
I do, yes.
Like all good booksellers should.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's great. It does like really quick newsletter. It doesn't take very long to read, which is really nice when you're swamped with all the other things. But provides like tips on everything from what it takes to, you know, do marketing and merchandising and event ideas to hand selling opportunities and like random productivity tips, which we all need. So to subscribe to Books and Whatnot or to check out their archives and newsletters, go to booksandwhatnot.com. So thank you to them for sponsoring the show.
Yeah.
Thank you, Beth.
Yeah, thank you, Beth.
Thanks, Beth.
Yeah,
I met Beth for the first time at BEA this past year.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yeah, I was really excited to meet her. I was kind of starstruck just because, you know, I feel like there's no person whose name I've seen more often.
Yeah.
And had, like, less of an idea of what they actually look like.
Yeah, so, that happens.
Yeah, so I was very excited. I mean, I see her name in my email every day, so...
Yeah, it was really fun at Winter Institute. We were able to be on her recording of, like, Winter Institute takeaways.
Well, you were able to be on her recording. I was altitude sick.
Yeah, that was sad.
But it was delightful to meet her.
Yes,
and
was
then
very
sit
nice.
On the floor.
She's great.
So, moving
anyway,
on.
Anyway, well, yeah, so let's talk about books and whatnot.
Whatnot.
See that transition there?
Add the little,
Killed it. Okay, this is going really great.
So, Ben, what are you currently reading?
I'm reading a few older things, or not older, I guess, but I'm reading this kind of, I don't exactly know what genre you call this, but it's sort of like these works of nonfiction or kind of memoiristic, essayistic nonfiction, where the authors kind of say, you know, here's a thing that's going on in my life or has gone on in my life, and here's how it reminds me of, you know, Lacan's mirror theory or whatever.
Nice.
And I think I'm reading some of this stuff for a little bit of research for a book that I'm trying to write or trying to start fairly soon. But I'm talking about stuff, you know, like Nick Flynn's memoirs I've been reading through again. Maggie Nelson I'm reading.
Yes, I was just about to ask about that.
Yeah, and I've never really read her before, you know. So I'm reading through her for the first time. There's a fantastic writer based in Houston named Lacey Johnson. Tin House published her memoir called The Other Side a couple years ago, and that's a real favorite of mine. Yeah, that's a big, that's like kind of the big overarching thing that I'm reading at the moment. There's a brand new book, I think it's out at least. You lose track of when books actually come out as a bookseller, right?
It's just a problem, yeah.
Yeah. But there's a newer book by a small press I like a lot called Outpost 19. And the book is called Madeline E. It's by Gabe Blackwell. And it's a book that takes as its sort of primary inspiration the Hitchcock film Vertigo.
Okay.
And I'm a real movie nerd.
That was fairly apparent in your book, yeah.
Right, exactly. So that will surprise no one who reads the book. But yeah, so Madeline E is the name of the character that Kim Novak plays in Vertigo, and he takes a lot of criticism of Vertigo, just sort of like snippets of critical thought and theory on it, and weaves it together with this narrative that's maybe memoir, maybe fiction. It's sort of hard to say, and why would you want to say anyway? Because that's most of the fun, right? Not knowing what the fuck's going on most of the time.
Totally.
So yeah, those are some of the big things I'm reading right now.
Nice. Yep. Emma, what are you reading?
Spreadsheets.
Stop being so depressing.
I started to read Station Eleven.
Nice.
For the first time. Sorry, guys.
It's such a good experience.
Yeah.
We've been talking about it on the show for a year now, so.
Basically, you know.
It's about time.
Yeah. But then, I remember that it's about the apocalypse, and, I have very high anxiety in the face of all things apocalyptic, so I stopped, because my anxiety is high enough right now.
Okay. That was a sad story. Well, Emma, you'll be very excited, because I'm about to start Uprooted by Naomi Novik, which, if anybody has been listening to the show at all, has probably heard Emma talk about it, and you gave it to me for Christmas to force me to read it, and I have no time to read things that are not for work right now, and therefore forced my book group to read it.
Yeah.
And almost all of my book group has already finished it, and they're obsessed, and, like, one of my book groupers has already started, like, reading her other series, and everybody's just all over it. They're so excited. So apparently it's good. I don't know. You know, I guess that's, you know, a couple good recommendations at this point. So sure. I'm really looking forward to it.
It's only one of the best books I read in 2015 and reread in 2016.
Yeah, man. That's the way to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm also listening to Shrill right now, the Lindy West book, which I went to her event in Seattle because she's a resident Seattleite. And the event, we had 1,200 people there.
Jeez.
I think. Which was just fucking nuts. And it was great. And she's amazing. And the book is just fantastic. So if anybody's looking for a good, a good book about what it means to be a woman in the world today, it's really fantastic. So I don't think that was a great blurb, but that's fine. I'm over it.
It's not like it's our job or anything.
Yeah, whatever. I had a really great customer come into the store the other day. And, like, you know, 30-something male appearing individual came up to me and was like, "Do you have a good primer on feminism?" And I was like, yeah, I can do that. And he was like, "Yeah, like, I work at a all-girls middle school, and I feel like I should really be a little more informed about, like, feminism." And I was like, "Okay, yeah, we can totally go with that." I gave him Shrill by Lindy West, We Should All Be Feminists. I handed him a copy, and he was like, "Can I have 5 of these?" And I was like, "Yes, sir, yes, you can." So he took, like, 5 of those. I gave him Rad American Women A to Z. And, like, it was just one of those, like, glorious bookseller interactions that you have where you're just throwing books in the air like glitter and they're just, like, everybody's excited.
Yeah.
And it was about feminism and I was like, this is great. So, anyway, Lindy West, everybody should read her. She's great.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's good.
All right, let's talk about new books. Ben, is there anything coming out either in June or July or further along that you're looking forward to?
Yeah, I think in July, a book I'm reading it right now, is Ben Winters' book, Underground Airlines.
I've heard a lot about that.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, it's one of those books that you kind of you read like 100 pages of it without even quite noticing it's gone by. I think plot is a thing that a lot of the times literary writers will sometimes shirk or pretend isn't important. But I mean, it's a beautifully written book. It's got a great voice in it. It does a lot of interesting things with the voice. But kind of at its most basic level, it's just a really, really interesting story. And the pages really just kind of fly by. It would be what one would call a page turner, I suppose.
Huh. That's a good term for it. You should trademark that.
Yeah, I think I'm the first person to use that.
Is there anything else you're excited about for the upcoming months, or?
Yeah, I'm excited about a book by a friend of mine. His name is Lawrence Lenhart. The book is called, I'm gonna get the title wrong. That's not the title of the book.
That would be
a great title. The book is called The Well-Stocked and Gilded Cage, or The Well-Gilded and Stocked Cage, or one or the other. The original title of the book was Dog Sucker, so I might just call it that instead.
Okay, that's appropriate.
That's easier to remember.
Right. But yeah, it's a collection of essays, and he's a friend of mine, and I would not plug the book if I did not think it was also just a really interesting collection of essays that looks at, you know, kind of a variety of pop culture, personal essays, right, that sort of intersect with pop culture and, you know, weird sexual proclivities and animals and...
like you do.
And, yeah, and not all in the same essay necessarily, but not necessarily...
Why not?
Not in the same essay. But yeah, so I think that he's written an interesting book. That's also Outpost 19, which did that book Madeline E. I was talking about earlier. I think that they're a small press that's really worth looking at. You know, they're doing interesting things. Yeah.
Cool. All right, Kim. What about you?
So the main book that I'm really excited about that's coming out July 19th is Here Comes the Sun by Nicole Dennis Benn. It is a story that follows three women in a family, so the mom and two daughters, living in, I think, contemporary Jamaica? I might have missed part of it, but I'm pretty sure it's contemporary Jamaica. The mom, Dolores, like, peddles souvenirs at the market while her oldest daughter, Margot, works at the nearby resort, and it becomes essentially the pimp for the community and is selling off younger girls. Her younger sister is kind of carrying the entire weight of the family's like hopes for a brighter future, and they're like sending her to this elite school that they can barely afford, and it is a very depressing book. You have this like ostensible paradise setting with this like terrifying foil of like this horrible life that everybody's having. It's really beautifully done, though. The language is just so beautiful, and very lyrical, it's great. It's not a happy summer read, but it's definitely a summer read. It feels summery when you read it because of the setting. So take that as you will.
Do you two gravitate toward depressing books?
I normally don't. This one also has it's got a queer subplot to it. I guess it's a subplot. Which, I don't know, when our rep came in, he was like, hey, Kim, you should read this. And I was like, stereotype much? And I was like, but yes, no, of course I'm reading this.
Right.
I'm not really into depressing books that often. I have some friends who like are really, like, you know, they're like, okay, A Little Life and like Stoner and... you know, what are the most heart-wrenching books I can read constantly? So that's not quite my game normally.
Right.
I don't know. Emma, you don't read that many depressing books, do you?
No. I mean, I don't...
You're more weird than depressing.
Yeah.
So they're not happy, per se. But...
No, but they're not, like, depressing. I don't mind a good cry.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah.
I think the question that stymies us the most at the store is when customers come in and they say, I'm looking for a good, happy read. I want a funny, happy book. And then we all kind of look at each other and we say, those exist?
We
can find one of those here in this bookstore.
My last recommendation for that, because I do feel like I get at least one customer a week. I always try and send them to romance Because you know that a romance, like, no matter what happens, in the end, they're gonna get together, and, like, everything's gonna be okay, which I love. But my last customer, I ended up recommending her Libabray's, Beauty Queens, and it's basically, like, Lord of the Flies, but with Beauty Queens. It's about,
Doesn't sound depressing at all.
A bunch of beauty queens are on a plane that crash lands onto a deserted, supposedly, island, and it's basically about them kind of realizing that they're more than just pretty faces, and it's hilarious and feminist, and the cover has, like, a woman in a bikini with, like, an artillery of lipsticks, like, crossing her chest. It's such a badass book. It's really good, and it's really funny. And I usually don't mention that it's YA, because for whatever reason, that turns people off. And this customer seemed very happy to take that home.
Ben, what do you give people when they ask for a happy book?
When I run away,
that's a solid life choice.
I excuse myself to go to the bathroom, and then I hope the customer goes away.
Jump out the window.
You know what? This is where Graphica is actually a good sell for this. Because, like, I'm looking at my bookshelves right now. I'm like, none of this is happy. And then I get to the bottom shelf where the Graphica is. Like, you know, you look at series like Rat Queens or Sex Criminals or something like that. I feel like that Lumberjanes, like the serial comics are actually pretty solid at this because they don't feel like they need to be depressing.
See, when you said Graphica, the first three things that popped into my head were Watchmen, Persepolis, and Fun Home.
Okay, well, so... speaking of not happy books, the other July book that I'm excited about is Jenny Fagan's The Sunlight Pilgrims.
Oh yeah.
Which I haven't had a chance to read yet. It's on my, like, when I get a treat for finishing enough PNBA books. But she wrote The Panopticon a few years back.
Oh yeah. I've been wanting to read that for
it's
years.
It's fucking fantastic, and it's the reason that I will follow Hogarth, the publisher, like, anywhere. It's like, that was my first intro to Hogarth, and I, like, literally will read anything that they come out with. And so yeah, The Sunlight Pilgrim is coming out. It's a, you know, future, like, set in, like, 2020 or something to that effect. So maybe vaguely dystopian in kind of a Panopticon sort of way, where it's kind of future, but it's not actually, like, too far in the future. So it's like the scary future where it's kind of close to home. But Fagan does a really good job. She had a vaguely queer bent to The Panopticon that wasn't the point of the book by any means, which is really refreshing. And from what I understand, that there's a similar thing that happens in Sunlight Pilgrims. So
yeah,
I'm really excited because I love her. So Emma, what were you excited about? Do you have stuff? Did you talk about stuff?
I'm excited about books. I read books. Well, in June, and I've definitely mentioned this before, on June 14th, Ramona Ossible is coming out with a novel called Sons of Ease and Plenty. Mm-hmm. Sons and Daughters of Ease and Plenty. And that's about... I haven't read it yet, but it's basically about a family that is really rich and then loses their fortune, which normally wouldn't interest me, but I will literally read anything Ramona Ossible writes because she's weird and brilliant. So I'm excited about that. Another book that I may have mentioned before, a trilogy by Essie Grove. It's finally coming to the end with The Crimson Skew. The Glass Sentence was the first book. And I just realized that The Crimson Skew is coming out in July. And this is a chapter book series. It's kind of an adventure series that takes... It's not time travel and it's not historical fiction. It's like a weird, like... What if time broke and all eras coexisted simultaneously and you could travel between them? Like, what would that be like? Thing? Which you wouldn't think that chapter book readers could handle, but it's great, and the kids that I've recommended it to seem to enjoy it. So I'm really excited to read the third one because I want to know what happens. Nice.
What's the title of it again?
So the first one is called The Glass Sentence, and the final one that's coming out in July is called The Crimson Skew. It's by S.E. Grove. So the first one was very much about, like, cartography and, like, adventure and maps. And the second one was a lot more political. So I'm really interested to see which way The Crimson Skew skews.
I guess it means that I'm a bookseller, that when you said that, it didn't even occur to me that you
said
were...
SKU.
I thought you were saying SKU. I figured it was a novel about trying to crack some 978 code or something.
If I hadn't been listening to Emma talk about this for so long, I would have thought the same thing. So,
I would right.
Yeah, that'd be a great... Somebody get on that.
So there's one other book, and I haven't seen it, and it's an art book, so I have, like, an e-galley, but it's not really good enough. Anyway, there's this other book called Collections by Leah Sobzi that's coming out in July, and it's being put out by Consortium. I'm pretty sure it's just, like, a photography book, but the subtitle is Birds, Bones, and Butterflies, which is, like...
It sounds up your alley.
Right up my alley. And she basically, this woman took... bird skins, bones, ferns, shoes, like all this different items that she unearthed from the drawers of national parks and photographs them. And I'm really interested to see what that, like, the kind of art book that she has produced from that. It looks really gorgeous.
Nice. That sounds very cool.
Right? Yeah. So I've read books. I've
read books.
About things.
Read books.
Read so hard, libraries try to find me. That shit crack.
So, Ben, we always start off by asking our interviewees to tell us their bookseller origin story. If there was anything interesting, amusing, or relevant about your childhood memories of books and bookstores, or just, you know, like, tell us how you became a bookseller and why.
I don't have a very good origin story, I don't think. One of my confessions is that I was never a particularly good independent bookstore citizen before I got a job at one. I did go to a lot of used bookstores growing up. I liked used bookstores quite a bit. You know, I grew up in a town in Maine called Portland, Maine, which is the closest thing to a city that Maine has. And it's got a fantastic bookstore in it called Longfellow Books that I just adore that store. And it had a lot of other bookstores there that I would go to as well that have since closed. But I was always drawn to used bookstores. I work in a store now that does not sell used books. So I was not anywhere near as much of sort of like a bookstore fanatic or tourist as I am now, or as I feel like I am now, or if I go to a new city, the first thing I want to do is go to the bookstore there or see what bookstores there are.
Obviously.
But I was more, when I was growing up, I was more of a kind of creature hunched in the corner of, you know, video stores and record stores. And I think that those spaces fill a similar need that the bookstore fills for a lot of people, you know, because it's all spaces where you go in there to, you know, there's kind of half retail and half cultural space, right? Where you go in to interact with people who care very passionately about the thing that you care about, and you go in there to discover new things and to, you know, kind of hunt around and find something that speaks to you in some way. And that was my version of that. So I mostly spent time in video stores and record stores. Again, many of which in Portland have since closed down. So, when I got my bookstore job, it made sense to me very quickly, you know, because I kind of thought to myself, well, this is the same thing that I was always doing before, just, you know, just with books, new books instead of new movies or new music or whatever.
So is Brazos your first bookstore?
It is, yes. I just sort of stumbled into it.
Yeah, how did you come upon it?
I went there once and someone offered me a job.
Okay.
That was what happened. I moved to Houston. I had been in Tucson, Arizona for several years before that. And I was there for a graduate program, and I taught through my graduate program. Then I taught for several years afterward in Tucson. Moved to Houston with my girlfriend because she got a job here, and freelanced more or less full time for a little while, and then freelanced, you know, book journalism and reviews and stuff like that. And then went to the store at the right time, and I talked to the manager, and I didn't go there looking for a job. I just went there to browse, and then I was lucky in that the timing was such that the marketing director or events coordinator had just left the store, and they needed to hire someone new.
And so you stepped right into the events coordinator position?
I stepped right into it, yeah.
Wow.
Which was probably a mistake that they made. They
that happens.
Yeah.
How's that been working out for them?
I don't know. You'd have to ask someone other than me, probably. I think it's been working okay.
So do you see yourself as a career bookseller, or?
I don't know. I don't know if I see myself as a career anything. I'm 30 and I'm still trying to figure out what I want to be when I grow up.
Ayo, millennials.
Yeah, there you go. So, you know, I've done a few different things in my life job-wise, but I mean everything that I've ever done has been connected to books in some way or another. So whether it's, you know, teaching is connected to books, right? Mm-hmm. So whatever it has been, I've always felt like I've been in the literary world in some way. So I think I'm a career literary citizen or litizen. Is that it? Can I say that?
That's a thing now. It is now.
Yeah, I think you've coined that.
It's been published again on the internet. So
there you go. Yeah. First page internet, now Littison. I'm on fire tonight.
Killing it.
Yeah, I think I'm a probably career, whatever the hell that is exactly, as nebulously defined as it becomes increasingly. Yeah. But that, you know, I feel very at home in the world of bookselling. I feel very happy to be in the community that I feel like I'm in as a bookseller. One of the things that I really like about bookselling is that, or rather about booksellers, is that, you know, to back up for a second, when I was a graduate student studying creative writing, you go to AWP and things like that, mm-hmm. and you're around a lot of kind of, you know, douchebags who want to be seen as writers as opposed to actually want to write or feel passionately about it. And there's a sense of lifestyle that surrounds the idea of being a writer that a lot of people fall prey to. So I guess what I'm saying is people get into it for disingenuous reasons. In bookselling, I've never met a bookseller who did not seem completely genuine and completely happy to be a bookseller. Mm-hmm. Because why on earth would you become a bookseller if you did not genuinely love books, right? Is it for the money? Would you do it for the money? Would you do it for the cultural attention? Or would you do it for the parties? I don't know. But it just seems like a very kind of warm community to be a part of.
Yeah.
And I've been very happy to be in it.
Definitely.
I'm going to replay that clip every time my, you know, parents ask what I'm doing with my life.
Right, yeah. I will too, probably.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
It was heartwarming and wonderful.
Right, yeah.
It's a labor of
love.
It is a labor of love, yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about Brazos?
Yeah, you know, it's a small independent bookstore in Houston, Texas. It's been there since 1974. We are, we focus on a lot of literature and translation, a lot of small press stuff, a lot of literary fiction, general interest nonfiction, of course. I think of us as being a little bit of a boutique store. We joke that we're a smarty pants bookstore. another phrase that we've latched onto recently is that what we do is down and dirty highbrow.
Okay.
Which is to say like that we like to sell smarty pants books to smarty pants people, but we do not like to do so in a smarty pants way.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah, I like because people always think that they see bookstores as kind of pretentious. And I really like the idea of being very like unpretentious and kind of like selling the pretentious stuff unpretentious.
Well, it's a very fine line, yeah.
There are bookstores out there that I know sort of you know, hew to the high fidelity model of customer service, I think. I can't imagine how those bookstores stay in business. I think that anything that you do to potentially marginalize your customers in a society where books are marginalized enough already, I don't know how on earth you get people to come back.
I want to snap. an appreciation of that, but yeah. I don't think that'll work out that well over the audio. But yes, preach. Yeah.
What would you say is the most interesting event that you've ever worked and or planned?
At Braces? The most interesting event. You know, in the summer, a lot of bookstores, the events programs are not so... The publishers don't put out a lot of big books in the summer, right? Yeah. And they don't tour a lot of big authors in the summer. So in the summer, you have to kind of create your own events programs. And this is something that I've really kind of realized since working at the store for a little while. And it's something that I really try to do there. And I think that what that allows you to do is it allows you to really plan some kind of strange things that will hopefully get attention and will bring people in. I mean, last year, we did a partnership, this thing in Houston called the Houston Shakespeare Festival, which happens every August, the first week of August. And they do two plays. One is a comedy and one is a tragedy. And they share a cast. And so the actors trade off each night and they alternate the plays for a week. And it's a huge thing. Tens of thousands of people go to go to the plays every year. And I don't know, it's just a lot of fun to go see those plays. And so last summer I thought it would be interesting to get some of that Shakespeare mojo in Brazos Bookstore. And so we partnered with them on a bunch of events that happened in the store leading up to the performances themselves. And those were a lot of fun to do because you got the actors from the festival to come into the store and to perform things, right? To sort of give little sneak previews, to put on a show. They were running through the audience. We were packed like crazy. They were out there in the crowd. They were just sort of, you know, it was like guerrilla theater. And they loved it. The festival loved it. It was one of those things where I was like, you're already drawing in tens of thousands of people. What do you, you know, I was like suspicious of their enthusiasm a little bit. I was like, we're an independent bookstore. What do you need us for? But they were pumped because they were, because, you know, I think when you're doing things in a huge stadium, it gets alienating a little bit, right? And so now they were going into a small space and they were doing guerrilla theater. And the energy of those things was just fantastic. And I love doing, you know, there's some author events you get that energy with, right? But but I love kind of events that are interdisciplinary in a way because they bring a show to the store and they recontextualize the idea of literature in a way that a lot of our customers who would come in for something like that may not be expecting, you know? And I'm always very, very happy to do those events. And this summer we're doing what we're calling Summer of Kubrick, which is a sort of film festival literary thing that we're doing in the store with a bunch of partners. So we're doing book groups in the store around the books that Kubrick based his movies on. And then we're doing screenings around the city with a bunch of community partners. And we're doing parties in the store and a bunch of stuff like that. And so now, you know, last summer was theater and books, and this summer is film and books. And it's all just a way of trying to approach this, you know, approach literature from a slightly different angle. I'm aware from 5 years of teaching that most people, when they hear about books, their eyes kind of glaze over, you know? And so these are ways, I think, of like I said, recontextualizing literary happenings as being something a lot more fun rather than sort of going to an author event and looking at a white dude with glasses and a receding hairline muttering into his open book, right? So,
which I'm sure doesn't correspond to any author events that you've had.
Oh, you've heard that these absolutely not. Things. I've heard stories.
Yeah, of course. Wait, so speaking of the theater and events and the month of July, are you guys doing anything exciting for the Harry Potter book that's coming out?
We're doing a midnight release party. It's funny, I've never done one of these things before, so I have no idea how it's going to go, and I'm actually not even going to be in town for it. Yeah. So
neither is our events coordinator.
Really? Yeah. So maybe there's a lot of events coordinators across America. Yeah,
every events coordinator is like,
it's like, fuck that. I'm not doing that. Yeah.
Interesting.
We have a kids specialist for that, so I'll
oh, yeah.
she can hand it all off.
See, the tricky
specialist.
Thing.
Yeah, that's.
Right. Yeah.
The tricky thing is it's not a kids book.
No.
It's an adult play. Like it's about
that's true.
Him.
That's true.
His,
right. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. His like 40s.
Yeah,
so,
I feel like it's really going to be our generation that reads it, not kids.
Yeah.
What if it's really a bummer? Like, what if he's, like, working
I think that's
some,
kind of the
like,
point of it. It's like...
Is wait, it?
So, Ben, we haven't talked about your book yet, but it kind of feels a lot like your book is what I'm imagining that your Harry Potter is going to be. Like, oh, shit, I'm, like, 30, and can, I'm, like, what am I doing with my life? Like, I kind of feel like that's going to be Harry Potter. Like, it's going to be fine. You did
it
first.
I can't wait to give unnamed press that quote. The sadness is like the new Harry Potter.
Yeah,
that sounds
go for
great.
It. Go for
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, the kind of the ennui of adulthood and like what that means. I feel like that's the point. I mean, I haven't read much about it, but
yeah. No, that's kind of the vibe I'm getting as well.
Yeah.
I mean, her. The end of the final book kind of depressed me, so I don't even know if I'm going to read it.
I haven't read any of them. I know almost nothing.
Is,
about
okay,
Harry
we need
Potter.
To stop inviting people on the podcast who haven't read Harry Potter because this happens every time. Emma, calm down. Calm down. Take a deep breath.
Had Sam not read Harry Potter either?
No.
And Caitlin, like, it's just, so you're actually our third guest that is an events
that has admitted
and
to this.
You
I would like
have
to point
read
out.
Harry Potter.
Yeah.
What the fuck, guys?
I probably should, right? I guess I need to.
Okay, so here's the thing. So a friend of mine is like she's never read Harry Potter before, so she is crowdsourcing her Harry Potter reading by having all of her friends read a single chapter each time to her, which is kind of perfect because nobody. Who's read the books minds like just dipping into a chapter and reading it and just like that being it. So she's like crowdsourcing her Harry Potter audiobook experience with like, you know, a great like reason to hang out with friends and like drink and read Harry Potter together. So maybe you should do that. It's been a fun experience. They're on like book 5 now. So like,
that kind of fandom is great. I mean, there are those things where you can just sort of ask a fan of something to, you know, do you a service and talk to you about the thing, and they are just so excited and they will do it all
day. I mean,
you know, in any context, whatever they're doing, they'll drop it and they'll go and they'll be like, you want to know about Harry Potter? you want me to read you a little bit of Harry Potter?
Oh my god,
Potter?
Here we go.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Right, here we go. It's like a dream of theirs or something, you know?
I'm not that person.
Oh, okay.
Read so hard, libraries trying to find me. That shit crack. That shit crack.
So Ben, let's get, I suppose, get back on track.
Okay.
Your first book, The Sadness, is coming out, and this is your first book, period, right?
It's my first published book, yes.
Okay. That's a good distinction, I suppose.
There's a lot of very bad ones that I wrote that are unpublished.
Yeah. I think that's probably the case for most people.
I think it is. It's
probably.
It's the case for most people I know, so... But yes, it's my first published book.
How did being a bookseller affect your writing?
I think it made me a lot more aware of the reasons that people actually read books. When you're in a graduate program studying writing, or when you are in, you know, academia of any sort, I think what you're often pressured to think about is sort of the notion of the project, right? To kind of define some sort of intellectual thing you're doing or you're working out or whatever. And that can often get very abstract and kind of wishy-washy, and a lot of academics care very much about it. A lot of readers do not give a shit about it at all. And I remember, you know, I left that world and I came into bookselling, and I remember, you know, like, kind of first couple days on the job, and customers would come in and they would go, well, what are you reading? Like, recommend me a book. And I'd pick something up and I'd be like, oh yeah, I'm reading this book. And they'd be like, well, what do you like about it? And I'd be like, well, you know, I love the way that, like, you know, I love the way that, like, the author is sort of playing with this trope of, like, the, you know, blah, 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 and kind of investigating this thing, and the language does this. And they would just sort of look at me like I was a crazy person, and they'd put the book back. And then I would listen to my colleagues, and they would go, you know, they'd be like, well, what do you like about this book? And my colleagues would go, well, you know, it's a I like the fact it's got a good story. It's about a mother who's reuniting with her son after 30 years or blah, 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 whatever, right? Yeah. And I realized that at a fundamental level, readers, I think, want story or want narrative, yeah. right? We're sort of geared for that in our bones, I think, just as human beings. And we want to hear stories. And the stories can be dressed up in a variety of ways. The stories can be smart stories. The stories can have all of these kind of, you know, intellectual underpinnings to them. The stories can be smarty pants, to use that again, right? But primarily what readers are looking for is something that will actually move them from sentence to sentence and page to page and scene to scene. Yeah. And that's something, it's like a very kind of elemental, fundamental thing about writing that you forget pretty quickly when you're around academics all the time. So the bookstore made me think a lot differently about that kind of stuff.
Nice. Seems like a positive change.
I think so. I hope so.
Can you give a succinct summary of your book as a like blurb, not just a, this is what it is entirely about, but can you give a good pitch for it at this point?
Oh my God, no. I do have to know how to do that. I can't do that at all. It's a book about film and failure.
Ah, that was very succinct.
Really good. Wow. Yeah.
Well done, sir.
I think, you know, it's, I think it's about that moment. You sort of alluded to this a little earlier. I think it's about that moment where you hit a certain age. All of my friends have had this moment. Everyone that I'm close to has had this moment. Where you hit a certain age in your life and you look around at the life that you have and you realize, you know, holy shit, this doesn't even vaguely resemble the life that I thought I would have, you know, or the life that I wanted to have.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a book that is on a certain level about making, you know, learning how to make a compromise with the life that you thought you were going to live and the life that you actually do live and finding a way forward from some shitty times.
But I'm not going to lie. It's I just turned 30, so this is hitting me pretty hard. Cause like, I think you're totally right. Like it's, I mean, obviously you're right. You wrote the fucking thing. But it
that doesn't necessarily mean I'm right.
but it's like the idea of adulthood as performance,
right, yeah. And, that's good,
and
yeah.
And how, like, yeah. we expect, like, how we are doing all these performative acts that are supposed to actually make us adults, but in fact we're just performing them and not actually living them in a certain way, and then the kind of the facade goes away, and you're like, oh, wait, hold on. That wasn't actually, like, the truth of what I'm doing, so...
Yeah, I think there's a part toward the middle of the book where the character Kelly, who's the central character of the book, really, she's sort of thinking to she has this sort of it's like it's very quick, it's like a paragraph or so, but it's like she's starting to think about sort of like the mysteries of adulthood, mm-hmm. and she realizes that she doesn't know like if there's different sized curtains to buy at a store.
I felt so hard about this part that you're talking about.
She doesn't know how to schedule a physical, mm-hmm. I think. Like, she sort of goes through this, like, rundown of all of the things that she realizes that she doesn't know how mm-hmm. to do. And that's just, like, a paragraph of the book. But every time, you know, when you publish a book, you get asked to read the book over and over again to proof it. And every time that I go through the book... you get kind of more and more bored with it as a writer, and then I always get to that paragraph, and I'm like, yes, this is what the book is about. It's this paragraph. Like,
this is
right
my to do
you know?
List right now.
Right. I'm like, yeah, I don't know those things either. I don't know how to. I don't know how to do any of that shit. Like, yeah, I could look it up, but I don't. I got other things to do. Yeah. Booksellers as adults is a strange thing. You're asking people to become adults and go out into the world where their primary relationship to anything in their lives has been sitting alone in a room and reading words on a page. I mean, that's not going to end well in most cases for them trying to go into the world.
That's a little too true, Ben.
Yeah, of course.
Somehow we manage.
Yeah, we do
we
it.
Manage. Yeah, we muddle through.
We're doing it, guys. We're doing it.
Yeah.
Read so hard, libraries can't find me. That shit crack. That shit crack.
Okay, so Ben, how do you choose what to read next?
I've always had books chosen for me, I feel like, more than I've chosen things to read, which I'm kind of happy with because I'm mostly an indecisive person. If someone gives me a book and says, hey, you might like this, I go, all right, I'll read that. And then I let someone else choose for me, you know. Mm. You know, I'm bored by stuff that I like mostly. I know what I like, you know, like I know the stuff that I'm going to reach for. So I'm kind of tired of that, you know. And so I'm very excited about the notion of discovering new things because people recommend them to me. And that to me is core or is central to the notion of the independent bookstore, the independent record store or video store. So I want the recommendation, you know. I've always wanted the recommendation.
Yeah. And it's definitely a lot easier to get as a bookseller. Do you find that?
I do find that because there's not only, I mean, the reps or publicists or whatever, but also, you know, you go on hashtag book Twitter and there are a million smart booksellers who are suggesting things to read, you know, and there are a million, you know, there's a bunch of booksellers that I follow and I pay attention to, whether it's, you know, the community people, you know, Stephanie recommending something or Stephen Sparks recommending something or Kenny recommending something or whoever it may be. Like, I pay attention to those things. I'm happy to be led around a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
Because otherwise I'll look at a pile of books and I'll just go, I don't know what the fuck to do with this. Uh-huh. And then I'll pick them up and I'll try to read them upside down and I'll just be confused. So
hashtag the struggle is real.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
So if you could grab drinks with one author, living or not, who would it be?
I've got two. Can I give you two?
Sure.
I would get drinks, first of all, with John Updike, because I have always thought that John Updike was just sort of the epitome of like the sort of obnoxious kind of, you know, when everyone sort of thinks of what the kind of bad things, the pernicious elements of the literary establishment are. I've always thought about John Updike, and I've never liked his books. Can I say that as a bookseller? I can probably say that as a bookseller, sure. Right? And I would like to get drinks with him because I'd like to talk to him. And I would I would like to find out if I find him to be as insufferable as a person as I find him to be
that
as a writer.
The stupidest answer to that question that I could have ever conceived for our first time asking it. Thank you, Ben.
That's the first one.
Yeah, you're
one.
Not
you're,
like,
you're
oh,
welcome.
I'd love to hang out with this person. You're like, I would love to see if this guy's just as insufferable as I think he is. Okay, please. That's great.
That answer may be unusable.
No, that was perfect. That was absolutely perfect. Continue, please.
I would really like, my genuine answer is I would really like to get, and maybe she listens to this. I hope she does. She probably doesn't because she doesn't listen to anything. I'd like to get drinks with Alice Munro because I imagine that I think
Alice
that would
Munro
be a very...
listens to this too.
If Alice Munro, please, if you're listening to this,
please just let us know. You don't need to get drinks with
Ben. Can you run my phone number somewhere on the website so Alice Munro can call me?
I don't even
me.
Care about you anymore. I just want to know if Alice Munro cares enough to listen to our podcast, which is not the case. But continue, sir.
I imagine that would be a very warm and peaceful experience.
To go
have a drink with Alice Munro somewhere. And it would not be alcoholic. I imagine it would
tea.
Be, you know, some kind of, it
yeah,
would be tea,
yeah,
right?
Say.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be, and we would
maybe
sit
a
on
hot toddy.
Yeah. I want Alice Munro to call in to correct us and be like, dude, I'm like a big Scotch fan. Okay.
Right. Yeah. No, I'd get wild.
You
with
know
that.
Me.
I'm all about those
Jaeger
bombs.
I'd get wild with Alice Munro. Yeah. We'd get a little rowdy.
Yeah.
She as soon as I get there, she takes out the bottle of Rumpelmintz and we start doing shots.
I'm so excited about this thing that's never gonna happen. It's gonna be so good. Please record for a future episode. Thank you.
All right, so Ben.
We're getting that sloppy part of the night.
What would you say your worst reader confession is?
Other than just all the kind of great classic books that I should have read and that I pretend to have read that I haven't, because there's many of those that I think everyone has, right? I'm really bad. This is, I think, a bad trait of a bookseller. I'm very bad at following trends. So I've never, you know, like I've still never, you know, I've never read any of My Struggle.
Yeah.
I haven't read Ferrante yet, you know.
You're in good company, sir.
There's right, yeah. There's this whole sort of like, you know, one of the big things, as I mentioned earlier, that we do at the store is literature and translation. We've got a guy on staff who has become kind of like nationally, like he sat on the Best Translated Book Award jury this past year. He's become this kind of like, you know, kind of bookseller who's famous for loving literature and translation, particularly Latin American literature. And the store has really kind of coalesced around this identity in a way. I mean, we do other things, yeah, but that's become a big part of our identity. And, you know, there's a lot of kind of like hip young publishers who are out there, like Chad Post with Open Letter or Will Evans with Deep Vellum or whatever it may be, that do all of this stuff. And I feel like it's a kind of great trend. And there's a lot of think pieces on it. And I don't know the first fucking thing about it. You know, like I don't read those books. I just have never read those books. And it's not for lack of interest. It's just, you know, you get pulled in so many different directions. And so there's all of these trends, and I always go to the, whenever I go to these shows or conferences with booksellers, they're always sort of talking about these things that are coming up or have just happened or whatever, and I sort of stand there and smile dimly and nod.
I mean, have you heard about coloring books?
What are those?
Adult coloring books.
I haven't heard anything about those.
Okay,
Tell me more.
Yeah. You should just Google it later. It's fine.
Someone told me that Adult Connect the Dots were
the next big thing.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah. I would love it if they were all just like squares. just like four dots on a page.
I support
that's
that.
That's it.
That'll be your next book, Ben. You're the fucking author here, okay? You make that happen.
I want that money. Yeah, I'll hop on that train. Yeah.
See, I would argue that as booksellers, we don't necessarily need to jump on the trends because, like everybody else, is like I don't need to read Ferrante because I can recommend it.
That's true.
Because everybody else is reading it.
Well, yeah, and I agree with that definitely because I think that like you know my struggle doesn't need my help as a bookseller. You know, like I don't have to help Purity.
Nope.
Yeah.
You know, like. Well. Nor would I want to particularly, but I don't have to help that.
Yeah.
So I'm always more inclined to look for like, you know, I mean, I love debut authors. I love reading debut authors.
Yeah.
I love reading small press books. I love reading that stuff, you know?
The people who need champions.
They need champions, yeah.
Booksellers are, you know, the fans of the underdog.
That's right, yeah. Because we ourselves are the underdogs.
Another industry tagline right there.
Like, right, this is like karma points or something.
We're doing a really good job here. We're doing a good job making a brand for bookselling as a whole.
Right, yeah.
A good voice.
Right, yeah.
All right. We also always ask our contributors what their Station 11 and or Wild books are. So what books would you carry with you after an apocalyptic event, and what books would you bring with you on an epic journey?
I was thinking very practically about this, because if you're lost somewhere, or if you can't get anywhere, then you need... You need long books, and I would like long books that I haven't read yet, I think. You know? I'd probably take 2666 with me, because I haven't read that. I would take the collected stories of Joy Williams with me, because I've never read Joy Williams before, and I feel like I would really love her. That's a bookseller confession.
But what if you hated it?
Well, I like hating things, so that's fine. There's a pleasure. There's a pleasure in being critical of things too.
That works.
Sure.
I would talk to the plants on the desert island about how overrated Joy Williams is.
You're like, you know what? Everybody's dead now. Doesn't matter, huh? Plants.
Right.
Yeah. Plants.
Don't even bother.
I would take a really good history of film with me, maybe the Monaco book that's called How to Read a Film, I believe, which is very visual and very informative, and that would remind me of movies as I read through it. You know what? If I can count this one as just one title, I would take a box set of the Harry Potter books with me.
Are you just trying to appease Emma right now? Or is that a serious answer?
I, That's a serious answer. I would like to read those.
It's about
those.
Time. Yeah. For,
it would be part of the I feel like there'd be a certain rich irony in becoming part of the cultural conversation after the larger culture was utterly destroyed.
That's so fucking dark.
Harry Potter at the end of the world.
That's great.
I will accept that.
And I don't know, my fifth one, I don't, Infinite Jest, I guess, because I'm
just because you might as well read it at some point.
Yeah, well, no, because I have read that one, but I'm also, I'm a white male, 30-something bookseller who wants to be a hipster, so I will take Infinite Jest with me.
Sure.
Yeah.
We don't know any of those.
I've never met a single one of those.
There's none of those out there. Yeah, I'm very unique, and I need to reinforce my hipster cred on the desert island / Fury Road that I would find myself on.
Oh god, Fury Road is a whole other, like, segment of this question we have not gotten to, so. Ben, what is your go-to hand sell?
My go-to hand sell, I love selling Fortune Smiles by Adam Johnson, and I love selling the Valeria Luiselli books, Faces in the Crowd and Story of My Teeth, and Sidewalks. I love those books.
What about an impossible hand sell?
I've got two that I really try to sell to a lot of people, and it's very difficult. I've sold a few, but not as many as I would have liked. Carrie Howley's book Throne, which was Sarah Band put it out. I love that
press.
Did you? Yeah, Sarah Band's great. I think everything Sarah Band does is just fantastic.
Have you read Limber?
No, what's Limber?
Oh, it's a book of essays by Angela Pelster. It's the reason that I know about Sarah Band. That's all vaguely about trees, but also like. And vaguely like nonfiction, but also super mythic and really fascinating.
Huh, that sounds like a Sarah Band book, right? They do great essay stuff. All of their essay stuff is so unique and interesting, I think. And
yeah.
It's also rare that there's a press that doesn't sell any, they don't do novels. Mm-hmm. Like, that's always seemed kind of interesting to me. Mm-hmm. But Carrie Howley's book, Throne, is just like, it's a beast, that book. And I've never figured out how to describe it to people because it's about mixed martial arts, but it's like, I mean, it's a philosophical inquiry into mixed martial arts, MMA fighters. And it's a character study of these two MMA fighters who are at sort of different points in their career. And it's also like kind of a parody of like the pompous philosophical inquiry into something like that, you know, like she's very aware of herself as a character. And she's created, you know, she's kind of created this persona in the book to be this pompous intellectual. So it's a parody of that. It's got all these sports cliches in it. It's got all these references to like kind of high cultural theory. It's just such a confounding book. And I don't know how the fuck to sell it to people. I don't know what to I don't know what to tell people to buy it. There is like a certain kind of person who will be interested in that book. But, you know, there's a lot of like. A lot of, like, you know, kids who come into the store around Father's Day and they go, you know, oh, my dad likes sports. What book should I get him? And then I always put that book in their hand and they look at me strangely and then walk out without buying anything. So the other one I was going to mention is a book that UT Press put out last year called Don't Suck, Don't Die by Kristen Hirsch. Uh-huh. Kristen Hirsch is one of my favorite indie rock musicians of the 90s. She fronted a band called Throwing Muses for many years and then recorded stuff as a solo artist, has done a number of albums. And she's written a couple books. Her first memoir is called Rat Girl. Mm-hmm. And I'm told she has a kid's book coming out, which I can't imagine because she's so morose in these books. But Don't Suck, Don't Die is just this beautiful book about her friendship with this other underground musician named Vic Chesnut. Who was a paraplegic and committed suicide. So this is very happy stuff, mm-hmm. right?
Sure.
And it's just such a beautiful, lyrical, strange book. And it's like, it's, you know, a confession I would make is that when Just Kids came out, I read Just Kids and I did not love it, you know? Mm-hmm. I was sort of puzzled by it a little bit, or I thought that it didn't, I thought it was almost too romantic. It didn't go to sort of the darker places that I would imagine that friendship actually had gone to, you know? Yeah. And Don't Suck, Don't Die, even though I thought it was, you know, wonderfully written, Don't Suck, Don't Die was like the book that I wanted Just Kids to be. Wow. You know?
That's a blurb.
Yeah, that's a solid handle. I'm surprised it's your impossible one.
Well, but nobody knows who the musicians are, you know? Right. Like, it's like, because, you know, you can say Patti Smith and Robert Mapplethorpe, and everyone knows who they are. But if you say Kristen Hirsch and Vic Chesnutt, people don't exactly know who you're talking about. So it's a little harder, and it's a difficult book in other ways that are just kind of stylistic, but it really, I don't know, just very, very sad and moving to me. It was happy. It's a happy book, I think, ultimately. I say that not as a joke, yeah. Right? I say it because it's a book about a woman who is writing about her friend, and she's lost her friend, and it's left this gulf in her life, or it's left this kind of chasm in her life, but you feel in the writing of the book like it's cathartic, you know? Yeah. Like you feel her moving to a place where she's happy to tell the story of her friend, even though she misses him like crazy. And that's something really kind of beautiful and moving. And it's not a happy ending necessarily, but it's better than a happy ending, I think, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm sold. Read so hard, libraries trying to find me. That shit crack.
That shit crack. That shit crack. So do you have a favorite bookstore that isn't Bezos?
I actually work at one of the Amazon bookstores. That's my confession. I have to tell you. One of my favorite bookstores in the country is one I have not been to yet. I'd really like to go to Kramer Books in Washington, D.C. Because I love the Kramer Books people. They seem philosophically aligned with what we do at Brazos. We always see them. I always have a lot of fun hanging out with them, and I really hope to get to their store, and they're one of the ones that I'm really, really curious about. And yeah, so I'd like to give them a shout out.
Fuck yeah.
Cool. Any literary media, podcasts, bookish websites, lit mags, or whatever that you listen to, read, seek out? Besides books and whatnot.
Books and whatnot. Can I just say that?
Yes, you can.
I just want to push the sponsorship.
We appreciate
for you.
That, sir.
I think Beth Golay does a fantastic job with books and whatnot. And
yeah, she's a delight.
I would encourage anyone to sign up for that.
Where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at Benjamin Rybeck. That's it of these. I don't have a website or a Tumblr.
Fine. Yeah.
I'm on Facebook. I'm on the Brazos bookstore social
there
media.
You go. There sure. you go. That's mostly my social media presence as well, is through Drunk Booksellers.
Elliot Bay and Drunk Booksellers.
Yeah, that's basically all I do these days. I don't have the I go to work and I tweet all day, so I don't want to tweet when I get home.
Sure.
And my email is ben@brazosbookstore.com. Anyone can get me there if they want me. Though why they would, I don't understand. But Alice Monroe can email me at ben@brazosbookstore.com.
Please, she can email us at drunkbooksellers@gmail.com.
That's also true. Oh, Jesus. Okay. Everybody check out Ben's book. Comes out June 14th. It's called The Sadness, Benjamin Rybeck. You can pick it up at any awesome independent bookstore.
If they don't have it, you should tell them to order it.
Cool. You can follow us on Twitter at drunkbookseller, singular. You can email us at drunkbooksellers, plural. We're plural on everything except Twitter.
That should be our tagline.
Plural on everything.
Plural everywhere except Twitter.
Fuck Twitter.
Where it's mostly just kidding.
So follow us places. Like us on iTunes, because that helps. And... you know, let us know if you have any people you want to talk to. Find me.
I am now marking my page. Don't want a crease on my page. Don't let me forget this page. Don't let me forget this page. I
am now marking my page. Don't want a crease on my page. Don't let me forget this page. Don't want to forget this page. I've got bookmarks at home, but I forgot one for the road.
I have a bookmark that I can loan.
Know how many bookmarks I own? I am now marking my page. Don't let me forget this page. Don't let me forget this page. Don't let me forget this page. Page.